Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Scott Schober, the founder and CEO at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Berkeley Veritronic Systems, or BVS for short. They're based in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. Scott, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Well, we looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very rich and historical background in cybersecurity. Could you tell us more about the highlights of your career, please?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a family business. It was actually founded, the company, Berkeley Veritronic Systems, about 46 years ago, and it was actually founded in Berkeley Heights, where my father lived at the time, and the company's always been focused on developing unique solutions that were tied to electronics. And then, of course, we really got a good growth spurt in about the mid to late 80s, where we got involved in the early development of wireless test equipment that was fundamentally used to build out the wireless networks as we know it now, the networks that make our phones work, the cell towers, and all the different types of frequencies and modulation schemes. And we still do that to this day. So for myself, I grew up in the company, the family business, from about sixth grade on through college and still to this day. So I've done a little bit of everything. My background is mostly from software programming and electronics, and have a excitement and passion certainly for wireless and certainly for security. And a lot of our products have always paralleled the wireless industry, but with a security focus, because we know what makes mobile phones work, and we know what bad guys do to try to hack into things and take advantage of networks. So it's been a real exciting journey for myself, and continue to look forward to developing new, innovative solutions to these complex problems and hopefully fight back against some of the cyber thieves and hackers that are out there. And as we discuss some of this, I'd be happy to share a couple of the key developments, things that we're doing.
Sure. Now, obviously, the name of your company has significance behind it. Is there a deeper meaning behind it? Does it relate to cybersecurity in any way?
Not exactly an immediate tie to cybersecurity. Really just Berkeley, from Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. That's where, again, my father grew up, and my grandparents, or my grandfather actually he's still alive. He just turned 99 years old the other day. He worked at Bell Labs for 40 some years there, right in Murray Hill. So and he was part of this company as well for a period of time as a partner. So there's a lot of rich heritage between that area of central New Jersey, Berkeley. Veritronics really just means various electronics and different systems that we bring together. And that, over time, we've probably reinvented ourselves as a company probably three times as things change in the industry. And the latest wave really is cybersecurity, probably really more focusing the past 10 years or so in the world of cybersecurity, especially with all the credit card breaches, the personal information compromised, people getting access into places they shouldn't. So that's where I think it's really taken off the past 10 years, where our focus has kind of shifted toward cybersecurity and complements a lot of our products and offerings.
Excellent. Now, how long has BVS been in business?
About 46 years now. We're going on, I guess, to our 47th year. We're a privately held company. We're kind of a small think tank, a little less than 30 engineers that really focus in on the problem. People come to us all the time and they have a problem, and we try to provide complete solutions. So we're mostly hardware intensive company that has complements, where we also do radio frequency design. We can handle software as well, the packaging, the assembly, the mechanical, complete turnkey solution for people's problems, which I think attracts a lot of people instead of having to go to 10 different companies to get their idea from concept to a delivered product. They go to one-stop shop, and we handle it all.
Now, does BVS have a presence in other countries as well for as long as for the time frame that you've been in business?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, probably, I'd say the late 90s, we started to shift our efforts outside of the United States, and in particular why we were, again, doing a lot of what's called drive test tools, wireless test tools to build out the networks. Many of the networks, for at least the 3G networks by then, have been built out throughout the U.S., and a lot of that work went abroad as other countries, imagine Africa and other areas, migrating from 3G technology, third generation, to fourth generation, which is currently what all our mobile devices are using for wireless connectivity. There's a need for that, and that's especially needed in different countries or outside of the U.S. because most of the infrastructure here is already built out with towers, and they simply pull down 3G equipment and add 4G in. So we were selling a lot of stuff into the countries, Africa, throughout Europe, so on and so forth. And in the past probably 15-plus years, we've added about 40 resellers. We train them. They buy a small amount of equipment that they can go out and demonstrate and show at trade shows. And then they, in turn, will sell our wireless tools around the globe. So it's really helped us grow from a global scale, which is kind of exciting for a small company. And that certainly continues to be the case. A lot of our orders, we got a nice order the other day from Brazil. We constantly are selling to the United Kingdom, different parts of Europe, Australia, a lot of growing areas that I see some exciting things developing.
Excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it a small to medium-sized business, the large companies like the Fortune 500, or a mixed match, or a combination of both?
Certainly a mix of different companies. I personally love it when we sell to other small businesses because I can instantly relate to them and I can get it. A lot of times the tools that we sell, they're dependent upon those to make their livelihood. So in particular, we make one tool that's used for installation of electric vehicle chargers, and our tool tells them where to actually place the antenna and what cellular modem they should subscribe to, which carrier. So they pick AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, or Sprint. They'll use our tool to make a quick determination of that, and we sell hundreds of those a year, and it's a simple IoT M2M installation tool. But for them, that's their entire business model. They may try to put in 20, 30 chargers a day, and if they didn't have that tool, they would be in big trouble. So it's nice to be able to work with these smaller businesses, electronic contractors, many cases, and selling tools like that. But we do sell to larger companies as well. We'll sell to Fortune 500 companies. We sell a lot to different government agencies, different DOD agencies, everything from Secret Service, FBI, CIA, you name it, across the board there, because all of those groups need cybersecurity threat detection tools, and that's very popular that they come to us and they're trying to keep a area secure from any type of wireless interference or espionage or compromising information. So we'll actively sell tools to them. So it's a really big, diverse customer base, which is kind of exciting for me. So as we develop new tools, we'll open up new verticals and often sell to a completely different industry than we ever thought. Recently, I started doing some research and speaking on and presenting about the topic of Bluetooth skimmers that cyber thieves are using in gas pumps and ATMs. The more and more I wrote about it and was educating people, I realized there's no tool to combat this. So I came back to the drawing board here with the engineers, sat down and said, guys, I got an idea. We need to develop a tool that can locate Bluetooth skimmers that are hidden inside gas pumps and hidden inside ATMs because they're stealing people's credit card and debit card information, and it's a huge problem. We started to embark on that, and boom, and we've sold hundreds of tools very quickly to, again, law enforcement, and in this case, to a lot of those in the petroleum industry, actually gas stations where they regularly monitor, and national weights and measurements groups and others to make sure that the pumps are secure without this credit card fraud that's going on by these cyber thieves. So I kind of have the ability to develop our customer base based upon a problem that's in the industry, and then we focus on developing the niche solution that answers that problem and helps combat it. So it allows us to somewhat control our own destiny as a company and who we're going to actually sell to, which I find exciting.
That sounds excellent. In fact, I myself was a victim of credit card fraud from one of these gas station scammers, I think, last year or so.
Oh,
really
boy.
Glad you have that product out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how are your pardon me?
I said that problem is a huge problem. You're not alone. Probably many of your listeners, too, because I talk to people almost every day, and they're finding out their credit card was compromised at the gas pump. And the main reason, in short, is there's really no security to protect it. It's just a simple mag stripe that's put in. The Bluetooth skimmer is hidden inside the pump. It takes about 15 seconds to actually install the skimmer. They have a standard universal locking key with only 6 keys for all the gas pumps across the nation. So it helps you to appreciate how easy it is to get into the business of being a cyber thug, buying the equipment on the dark web, installing it, and start stealing credit cards without getting caught. So it's affecting all of us, unfortunately.
Wow, yeah. Luckily, my damage is only just a couple hundred, so I caught that, unfortunately. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. How large is BBS Security, like, from a growth standpoint, employee size?
We're a little under 30 employees, and we're probably typically we're in the range between $4 to $5 million a year. And I anticipate over the next couple years that that's going to continue to grow and climb up, especially as the word gets out there that we're offering these niche solutions in the world of cybersecurity.
Okay, when I looked at your website, you have a wide range of products. I mean, they range from, you know, wireless to radio frequency. Could you please elaborate more on them in more detail and how it is used in cybersecurity or network security?
Oh, sure. A lot of the probably the hottest area as of late is stopping any type of mobile devices, wireless devices, which typically goes back to our mobile phone. We all have them. We all are dependent upon them. And a mobile phone in the wrong place, a secure facility, can do a lot of damage from an espionage standpoint. You've got a microphone there. You've got a camera. You've got multiple wireless technologies. You've got email capability, texting. The list goes on and on. So if somebody wants to compromise proprietary information, classified information, drawings, schematics, any type of know-how, they'll use a mobile phone. So oftentimes these secure facilities, and again, this could be anywhere in corporate America or it could be a DOD agency, they don't allow phones beyond a certain point. That's where our tools come in. We have mobile solutions with direction-finding antennas that allow you to hone in on an actual phone that's transmitting. We also have portals that, just like we go to an airport and you might walk through a metal detector, well, we've designed a very unique ferrous detector that will actually pick up if you have a mobile phone on your person or even inside your person, if it's hidden in a body orifice or other areas like that or snuck in. We can detect that because we're picking up the unique properties of the high-powered neodymium magnets inside of mobile phones, speaker, microphone, and the vibrator. And then we can alert where on the body it actually is when you walk through that portal. That's a huge, huge problem. How do you detect phones that are shut off or the battery removed if they're smuggling them in to prisons, corporate facilities, government facilities, a testing facility where people are trying to cheat on a test? So we have a very diverse customer base there that we're actively selling these portal solutions to alongside our mobile tools that are used to hunt this down. And most of the buyers for this, usually in their title, they're in charge of the cybersecurity within a building because all the wireless is very closely connected to the network, to the computers in a building, to all the personal information. So they're coming to us to keep all of that personal information secure, whether it's employee information, credit cards, banking information, emails, you name it, across the board. All of that has to be protected, especially when you bring that wireless component, the mobile phone, in as a threat. And that's where our tools really fit in and sell very well to alert you and warn you that, hey, you can't go beyond this point. And we do it not just for cell phones transmitting, but we also monitor the Bluetooth and the Bluetooth low energy. We monitor the Wi-Fi at 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz and other various frequency bands where any type of wireless threat could come into a facility.
Okay. Sounds excellent. Now, which products seem to be more demanded?
You say that again? You dropped out there. I'm sorry.
What kinds of products seem to be most in demand by your customers?
Well, certainly the products I just reviewed there, but there's also another segment that's really emerged that I'm super excited about, and in the past probably couple years, it's taken off like a rocket. And this, we've taken the same engines and the concepts that we've developed over the years of our understanding of radio frequency architecture, and we've designed a unique product called a Transit Hound. And that's a cell detection engine with some proprietary algorithms that we've developed that actually allows one to see in a very close bubble, a small space, if somebody's using their mobile phone while they're operating heavy machinery or operating a train. And we've seen how many crashes there are, distracted operators on a train, not just in this country, really, but around the world. So we've really perfected a tool, this Transit Hound, that can actually pick up the radio frequency signal of an operator if they're texting or making a call, and we trigger a DVR and camera to actually record that activity and behavior and correlate the time, the location, the signal strength, along with the actual photograph evidence there, and that could be used then to properly discipline or fire a locomotive engineer or a heavy machinery operator. Maybe imagine coming out of a mine and they've got 300 tons of ore on the back of the truck, and if they're distracted for a moment on their phone, it could mean lives. And many people have died, and fortunately, using our solution now, they're continually catching operators that are not adhering to the policy of the corporation, and it's catching these bad guys, and it's fortunately getting them disciplined, so they're getting the mobile phones out so they could stay safer and not destroy equipment and not hurt people's lives. We're currently on a little more than 7,000 locomotives with our solution, and it's continually growing, which is kind of exciting. And then another offshoot of that is a product we're just launching, and it's called the Roadhound. We're taking the same concept, but monitoring how drivers, if they're behind the wheel and texting or making a phone call, that we will light up a sign, a deterrent, and let them know that we see them on the phone actively and that they got to hang up and drive. So some exciting developments that we're certainly part of.
Okay. Now, do your products have both a hardware and software component, or is this all strictly hardware?
Yeah, great question. Actually, primarily hardware, but most of our products do have a component where you could fine-tune them and configure them initially when you buy them, and that's a software component where it's a higher level, a Windows software, or some of the units actually have a screen with a built-in GUI on there, graphic user interface, that you could set up and configure the levels, the bands you want to test, what country you're in, so on and so forth.
Okay. Now, from your website, it looks like that you serve a number of distinct industries ranging from the federal government to the correctional facilities to even the railway systems. Could you elaborate in a little bit more detail how the BVS product line is used in these market segments?
Yeah, within each segment, we usually have a tiered solution of products that can be effectively used. So if we pick the correctional facility, we've got about six different products that we target just to that market. And most of it is honestly from the feedback from security personnel within the correctional facilities. They'll approach us and say, hey, if you guys only had a product that could be 100% covert and hidden on a person and operated without inmates knowing that you're looking to see if they have any wireless devices. We hear that. We go to the drawing boards. We develop the Pocket Hound, which literally fits in their pocket. Nobody sees that they have it on them, and it vibrates when they get closer to the proximity of their target, that being a mobile phone. If an inmate smuggles it in, it's a contraband cell phone. Been fabulously received. We've sold several thousand of them around the globe, and they're actively used in prisons. That same concept, we also focused over in the education market, exact same product, but there it's used by teachers and proctors of exams. They'll walk up and down the aisles, and if any student pulls out their mobile phone to phone a friend or do a Google search to cheat on a test, they will get a vibration. And as they get closer to that student, they're trying to walk around, they'll feel the vibration increase, and there's little LEDs as they get closer to illuminate and let them know, hey, I'm close to my target. This kid is cheating and using their phone, and then they can handle the situation. And that, again, is another product that has spawned and taken off and used throughout hundreds of universities where exams are being given and students are being checked to see if they're actually using their mobile phone actively during the exam. It's exciting stuff. With the railway area, we've targeted, as I mentioned there, the Transit Hound, but recently we developed, and we did a rail show this year out of Nebraska, and we developed a new tool called a PTC Hound. And what that does is, PTC is positive train control, and if you're familiar with all the train crashes, they have an elaborate communication system that is used to alert the train in advance if there's a problem, if brakes need to be applied. Say the operator is distracted, falls asleep, has a heart attack, whatever the case may be, and that train needs to be slowed down. It could be done automatically. But if those communication protocols do not happen flawlessly, the signals don't propagate properly, it's not going to work. So we've developed a tool that allows the engineers to go around and properly engineer the wireless signals so it does have flawless communication throughout the entire positive train control system throughout the nation that's being built out. So that's certainly an exciting area to be working in, along with all the major rail companies and the technology integrators. So we're very tuned into the industry's problems and, again, developing a niche solution that serves that particular industry. And I think that's an important way that we can effectively grow our business over the next few years by listening to our customers very, very carefully.
Sounds good. Now, could you elaborate further on your cybersecurity services? I know that there's a domain by your name, scottshorber.com. Are those cybersecurity services that you offer through your own name, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah, that's the portal really where you could find out more about that. And I offer a variety of different things. They're tied closely to cybersecurity, again, which parallels my day-to-day activities here in the business of BVS. And a lot of the stuff is honestly best practices in education. I'm often hired to go in as a cybersecurity expert and to speak on a particular subject and give advice, help define the problem, help people understand what the best and effective solutions are, what best practices can be employed within the business, and whether it's a small business or a large organization. Oftentimes, they're frustrated. They want advice, but they don't want to hire a huge company and spend a ton of money. They want to hire somebody that they can relate to, and hopefully they have a small business, and I have a small business. I've been compromised and hacked as a business owner, and it was the reason that prompted me to write a book, Hacked Again, and share my story of the mistakes that I've made, the things that I've learned in the process. So I'll often go out and literally educate other business owners and share my horror story in hopes that they can learn from all the different mistakes I've made, but also, more importantly, the things I've learned in the process so they don't go down the wrong path and become victims. Most of the aspects of cybersecurity that people do not realize, they quickly think it's geek speak and you got to be a real deep technical dive to understand how to stay secure from cyber thieves. And that's not the case by any means. Most of the time, it's employing best practices, what I call more common sense things that people fall victim to every single day. You hear about ransomware. And I talk about that all the time, and it's constantly a problem. It's estimated that more than half the U.S. businesses last year suffered a ransomware attack. That's staggering. And the effects of that is it affects the bottom line because people have their data held hostage. They have to pay usually in Bitcoin, hundreds or thousands of dollars to get their data back to get it decrypted. But oftentimes, the best practice is what people don't realize, if they just backed up their data on a regular basis and disconnect it from their network, keep it stored off-site, if they ever are a victim of ransomware, they could simply wipe the machine, reload their backup, and they're good to go. Instead, many people wait until it's too late, they don't have a backup, and they have the gun to their head. It's either pay the ransom or you lose all your data, so they have to pay the ransom. So cyber thieves count on that. So often when I go into companies, educating them on the best practices is so vital, and people don't understand what phishing scams are, how to stay protected, how to create a long, strong password and why that's so important, the danger of password reuse. So depending upon the company and their level of expertise, I'll come in there and really tailor a presentation to what their needs are to make sure that their company is strong. And I typically do this a couple times per month. Now, another week or so, I've got two presentations, one here on the East Coast and then one I'm flying out on the West Coast there. And again, it's going in for typically about an hour, and it's a focused presentation to educate the entire staff or at events so they can be cyber savvy and keep safe from these cyber thieves.
Sure. In fact, I've written a few blog pieces on ransomware, and I think one of the tips I personally recommend is never pay via the cyber attack for a ransomware attack, because you're just going to feed more of their egos and, you know, kind of make them do more attacks. The only cyber attack group that I've actually read about, they actually will give you the decryption files after you pay them. I think it's the one that has launched a WannaCry, or I think ransomware, if I'm correct.
Yeah, WannaCry, the first wave of it that actually came through. Unfortunately, though, once somebody's a victim of ransomware, and it's often when you do pay, then they'll go back after you a second or third time, and they'll change the variant of the malware, and that's part of the problem. So, yeah, the first time you paid up, hey, here's $300 in the equivalent of bitcoins or whatever they're accepting that day to stay anonymous. Next time they're going to come back at you, they're going to look on their chart and say, oh, wait, we hit them with WannaCry last time. Let's hit them with another a variation of that malware. So that way they won't be able to use the same decryptor again. And if it's a new one, a new malware, a new strain, they'll have no answer to it, and they'll have to again pay and again and again. So it's an endless cycle, and they really manipulate people. And especially they'll go to specific areas. They're going to target municipalities. They're going to target hospitals. They're going to target educational systems. There's a treasure trove of personal information that they can take on the dark web and quickly sell. And sometimes each record may only be a buck or two, but when you're stealing so much information, you get hit a big company and they've got 100,000 customers. Now you got all that personal information. Tomorrow you turn around and sell that could translate into $100,000, $200,000 quickly. And it's hard to catch these guys because, again, they're anonymous using Bitcoin. They're on the dark web using the Tor browser.
Right.
So they could disguise their whereabouts and their activity. So it is a definite cat and mouse game that's going on out there. But ransomware seems to still be at the top of the list as far as the threats. And the number one thing that people can do about it is not be so quick to click on in an email, a phishing attack. So again, a simple best practice to put in place, a good junk mail filter, being careful where you surf on the internet, and being careful what you click on can prevent the majority of ransomware attacks. And that's what people don't realize. They're in control of their own security. And so empowering them and educating them is a very important step to help them staying safe on the internet, on their computer networks, within their company, and personally too.
Excellent points made there. Now, can you share any customer success stories, like one case study or even two, like your customers like very happy with you and, you know, they've come back to you for repeat business over the years? Could you elaborate on maybe one or two customer, you know, case studies like that?
Oh, sure. We've got probably about 100 of them posted up on our website on bvsystems.com. But certainly, just one that the freshest one that comes to my mind is on Friday. I presented down at Washington, D.C. We're launching a new product that's used to detect cell phones, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, Bluetooth low energy, and other threats all integrated into one solution. It's called a Yorkie Pro. We're going to be officially releasing it in December. But I brought it down as a sneak peek to a specialized group, and these guys are technical surveillance countermeasure experts. These are the guys that go in, they'll sniff for bugs at the White House, at dignitaries, at celebrities, to keep people safe, or corporate executives, you name it. And they are dying for a tool like this. And we've sold them, the entire group, a whole bunch of our tools. When they saw this, I had six different people approach me and said, I am buying that tool. Send me a quote. And one individual walked up to me and he said, that one's got my name on it right there. Put my order in. I'm buying it. Just let me know the cost and I'll give you my credit card. And these are not low cost. These are $5,000 solutions. So it makes you feel good when you can present on a product talking about the problem in the industry and how the tool provides a solution. And within 10 minutes after your presentation, six people come up and say, I am buying that product. That's exactly what I'm looking for. You listen to us. Thank you. It makes you feel good, and it helps you know that you're doing good because it's stopping the bad guys that are spying on people, stealing information. The espionage that's going on right now is unbelievable. People don't realize how bad of a problem it is, especially with China stealing secrets from the United States and other countries are involved. Well, huge problem, and there's a huge need for people that can actually go out there and find and stop the espionage, and often our tools are used in conjunction with this, which again, I think just makes you feel good. Another short one is not too long ago, one of the major rail companies came to us, has our product on their locomotive, and they were able to use our tool to effectively capture somebody actively texting while operating a train that was loaded up with 100 cars behind them and stopped the potential from a derailment happening because they were distracted and the person was basically terminated on the spot. And it's, at the end of the day, it's most important you realize we're able to save lives, and that makes me feel good. One other case was earlier this year, our reseller in France, they bought 24 of our units called a Wolfhound Pro. It's used for search and rescue. And they deployed this on a helicopter when there was a girl that was lost in the park, huge park somewhere in France. They were flying around, and they were able to actually find her with our tool. We were able to hunt down the actual cell phone. They saved her life basically because of our tool, which just puts a smile on your face and says, you know what, everything we do here, it's worth it. The headaches, the stress, the engineering, the long hours, because ultimately we're saving lives, be it on the road, on train tracks, from a helicopter, it's lost, it doesn't matter what it is, we're helping to make a difference, and that's a good feeling.
Sounds excellent, yeah, especially with the last one.
Yeah.
Now, do you depend upon a value-added reseller of our strategic partner model for your sales?
No, we typically don't, not here in the United States. Outside the United States, yes, because we have sales engineers here within the U.S. that support and handhold and explain technically to our customer the best solution based upon what their problem is and their budget. Outside of that, we train our resellers, and they're value-added resellers because we have to help them understand the latest cyber threats. We have to help them understand how wireless technology works and how our security solutions work in that realm so they can effectively train the customers, educate them, and show them how our solutions work. So we're regularly training, whether it's training we go to their facilities here in the United States. We also do a lot of online training over Skype. So training and education is a huge part of our business, because if we're not sharing techniques, tools, and information, they're not going to be effectively conveying that to the end customer and educating them to get the most out of the tool and the value out of it. So we're constantly looking for ways to improve on educating all of those value-added resellers and, in turn, the end customer.
Sounds excellent. Now, I've seen on your website that you've won a number of key awards. I'd like to extend my congratulations on that. Can you elaborate on the latest award that you received in some more detail?
Oh, yeah. We have gotten some wonderful awards that I think I don't want to take personally credit for, but I look as far as an accomplishment from our entire company, because it's really a team effort. We were listed this year on the Cybersecurity 500 list, which is a global list of the top 500 cybersecurity companies that are making a difference, and they look at it across about 20 different categories. So it's not just how much money you make, but it also looks at your products and your services, your expertise in the industry, and how you're helping companies. So it's a tough list to get on. So we were certainly honored to make the list this year. It's found at cybersecurityventures.com. The list is published at. And I was privileged this year, this was back in, I think, May, to announce the actual list, because I was asked to do the opening remarks at the Cyber Financial Summit in New York City alongside the Stock Exchange, and kick off the event and also announce that the Cyber 500 list would be officially announced. And to my pleasant surprise, we were named on that list as receiving the award, which was a great honor, I think, and it was certainly well received by everybody here within our corporation and the community at large there, all the companies that we deal with that actively buy our solutions. So that to me is one of the standout ones amongst many others that we've gotten.
In fact, it's funny to say, because that's how I researched your company, was through that list at Cyber 500.
Oh, okay,
Cybersecurity
great.
500.
Yeah. Then it's definitely valuable to be listed.
Yeah, so again, I offer my congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So could you please elaborate more on the work you've done with the Internet of Things? As a writer, I've blogged a little bit on the IoT. I've written some articles, but it's still kind of a murky area where you know, people still don't really understand. Can you give a little bit more insight into that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I talk about the Internet of Things often, and I too have blogged on it. I wrote a piece even and interviewed some key executives for a column I did I was hired to do in a Fortune magazine. The Internet of Things continues to explode and grow, and I'm actually working with a couple companies, and one company in particular, they've taken me on as an advisor as they're launching some IoT intellectual property as well. And some of our more recent developments are actually test tools to alert you if a secure space, if somebody brings an IoT wireless device into that space, that it can alert you. So IoT is growing in leaps and bounds. In the next few years, it's predicted that the average consumer is going to have over 50 devices within their home that are connected to the Internet. And most of those connections, again, the conduit is wireless, so we're right in the middle of that entire ecosystem exploding, and it's pretty exciting. When I presented last week, I shared, I recently got a camera. It's called a Wyze Cam. It sells on Amazon for $29.95, so under $30.
Oh, wow.
This camera has got built-in Wi-Fi capability, so you basically sync it up with your Wi-Fi access point, and you simply plug it into the wall. It can rotate almost full 360 degrees. It has motion detection built on, so if somebody walks across the room, the camera locks onto the person and follows them. You can remotely connect with an app they provide at no cost. I have an iPhone, so it's on my iPhone. So at any moment, I could touch my iPhone screen and see real-time, high-definition video wherever I have the cameras put. So I have one inside my house, for example. So I could see any activity. If I'm not home, if the kids are home, there's a problem. You could talk through the camera both ways. So you could talk to the person, they can talk back to you. It's got a zoom capability. It can move up and down on the camera besides rotate 360. It's unbelievable. You can take snapshots from it. You have 14 days of cloud storage. That's all free as well. And again, all of this is $29.95. That's an example of the Internet of Things. Everything has a unique IP address these days. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely will take a look at that. Maybe I might buy one myself too. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
great for security.
Now, now to go on to other points of cybersecurity, we keep hearing about Russia in the news all the time, North Korea, China, you know, what have you. And I'm like, Russia, we got the midterm elections coming up. What do you think their chances of meddling if they do again? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I could say with probably 100% certainty that they will continue to meddle. I did an interview. This was back on Fox News, and this was out of the L.A. studio right before the 2016 presidential election. And there was talk then about did Russia meddle with the election? And I said at that time, absolutely. They're constantly meddling, be it from propaganda campaigns through social media channels, be it, you know, FaceTime or Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. They're certainly controlling all that through YouTube, but through physical hacks as well, where they're actually causing disruption. And I think that's what they're trying to do, trying to make people question the democratic process, question the whole integrity of the voting and election systems, how it goes on here in the U.S. Have they changed the vote to swing it one way or another? I do not believe that's the case. But they've caused enough disruption that here we are talking about it after several years of discussion, and it's continuing to happen, and it can't be stopped. So that's a very serious threat. I don't think it was taken as serious when this was really making the headlines a few years ago, and they've certainly stepped it up and taken more steps to try to make sure things are not connected through the Internet. But I think it's important to look at the process of handling large sums of data like that. Oftentimes, the vulnerability or where the threat is, it's not necessarily just the voting machine. That information comes off the voting machine and often is put in, tabulated in spreadsheets. Those spreadsheets are put on a computer network that it's emailed to somebody else. So you have to look at the entire chain to make sure that it's all secure and encrypted. And oftentimes, if you follow the data, how it's taken from each single vote to where it's totally tallied, they're not securing it properly, and it's not encrypted, and some of it's paper, and some of it's ballots, and some of it's electronic. Most of it's not connected directly to the Internet, but some of it is. So what happens is it exposes to a huge variety of different types of vulnerabilities that somebody from the outside can start to exploit and work laterally through the network and cause all kinds of chaos. And that's exactly what I believe Russia has done and continues to do, but no one should underestimate China because they're doing the same thing as far as meddling to some degree with different elections.
Well, okay. But I didn't realize it was that that serious. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what are your general plans for expansion for BVS? Are you going to offer new products and services or enter new markets or kind of a combination of both?
I would say a little bit of both. We do have our long-term growth plans. If it continues at this rate, certainly we cannot stay at the size we are. So it's hiring more people, bringing in more talent to handle the projects and handle the higher production volumes we're hitting. We also purchased a piece of property next door, which is about an acre, and we would have to build in a building adjoining this building, so we have a lot more space, and hopefully we could double in size and take the company to a larger scale. And it's a five-year plan over the next 5 years to kind of plan to do this, so it's not completely disruptive. And the most important thing is that we could handle the growth properly to service our existing customer base. If you grow too quick, it's very hard and you lose a lot of customers, so you want to take it to scale but do it slowly and conservative so you can properly handle the growth and manage it.
Sure. Now, the cyber threat landscape is changing like on almost daily basis, even by the minute. How do you plan to keep up with all this?
Well, I think I have the unique privilege of being in the midst of a lot of the breaches and getting tips from friends, business colleagues, the media, every time something looks suspicious or is happening. So that tells me I need to constantly keep on the cutting edge of doing research, reading, interviews, interviewing other people so I can understand that changing threat landscape, as you mentioned, because if I'm not on top of it, I can't help our team of engineers focus on the next tool that's going to counter that threat as it's evolving or coming out. For example, talk about skimmers. ATM skimming is a huge problem. Right now, there's no way to easily identify a physical skimmer that's put down the neck of an ATM machine. So when somebody puts their debit card in there, it's copying their personal information on the card immediately off the magstripe. So we're developing a tool that will allow you to actually put it into the neck of where the card reader is and determine if there's a skimmer placed in there, that it could be put on a keychain and bank personnel or security personnel could simply walk up to any machine, put it in, and give them a green light if it's clear, or red light and beep if there's a skimmer in there, so they could shut the machine down and remove the skimmer so nobody's personal information or could be compromised and stolen. So focusing on tools like that, I think, is very important. Listening to, again, the problems that are out there and then honing in on what's the best solution that's going to immediately solve that problem so the problem doesn't become too big where a huge amount of people are compromised as far as their banking information.
Okay. How do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing or evolving in the coming years, given your extensive background in security and cybersecurity?
Well, I think certainly it's going to grow immensely. And why do I say that is because I'm constantly still educating people about the basics. You would think that people now understand the importance of a long password, a strong password, never to reuse the same password on multiple sites. You would think people would understand the importance of using a good anti-key logger, because malware key loggers are put on computers and mobile devices that record every single keystroke that you make. Cyber thieves love to dispense that everywhere so they can basically collect all your information. When you go on to a Amazon or a banking site and you physically type in a password or your login credentials, they're stealing all of that stuff actively. Yet most people I talk to have no clue what in the world a keylogger is and why it's important to have an anti-keylogger software on all your devices. So I think it's constantly, again, looking at the threat landscape, changing, educating people, and then seeing what percentage of the people understand it and are actively taking steps. I'm starting to see stronger passwords being used and not reusing the same passwords. People are getting away from the same old thing. They're starting to use multi-factor authentication, layers of security to keep safe, which is wonderful to see. But again, it's only a small percentage of people that are actively doing this. We need to educate and share the message to everybody, the importance of taking cybersecurity in your control. So I'm going to continue to monitor the space, learn the latest threats, share them with people, and hopefully educate them to help them see how they can stay safe.
Excellent. Now, what do you think the biggest cyber threat will be? I know we've talked a lot about ransomware, but is there something other than ransomware that you think will be evolving that's going to be even worse in danger?
I think it really parallels the essence of what ransomware is. Ransomware is simply a type of malware, which is actually tens of thousands of variants and different strains of malware that keeps evolving to compromise personal information, encrypt it, and trade for money. What's going to happen is the way ransomware works, I think, is going to change to the point where people, cyber thieves, will attack people maybe through their medical devices. If you have a defibrillator, they're going to hold you hostage. It's got wireless connectivity. They're going to hack into it, and they're going to hold their hand out, but it's not for $10 or $100. It's for $100,000. They're going to hack your Tesla and lock you out of it, or lock the doors while you're in it driving and take it over and demand a ransom, or they'll crash your car or do something crazy like that. It's those type of extreme things where hackers will target critical infrastructure where we're dependent upon water, electric, sewage, and hold a true ransom that, hey, we're not going to let electricity be delivered and we're going to take over this substation unless you pay our demand. It's those more serious kinds of ransom. That's what I think the next few years we're going to start seeing evolve, because once the cyber thieves go through consumers and small businesses and larger corporations, they're going to look for bigger payouts where it's not as secure, and that's where they'll set their sights toward larger ransoms where they can actually do the most damage, and that's a lot scarier and will affect a lot more people, unfortunately.
Wow, that is really scary, especially when they can mess with the, you know, the pacemaker. Ooh, that's really, because I'm a heart patient myself too, and
yeah,
that's really, really scary. Literally holding your life hostage. That's really
exactly.
Yeah. Finally, as we close this podcast, what are your general recommendations that you tell people as to how they can protect themselves from cyber threats? I mean, there are tons of recommendations and advice out there, but from your own personal experience and your years in this business, what do you recommend? What are, like, your top tips for the average everyday consumer or the average everyday business? What do you recommend for my audience?
Yeah, there's a good number of them. One quick reference, if they go right just to my website even, scottshober.com, I've got a simple download, doesn't cost any money, it's secure, and you could pull down my top 11 tips that will keep you safe in the world of cybersecurity. And I think a lot of my tips will vary from what you're doing, if it's online shopping, if it's wireless connectivity, if it's this, it's that. So there's a variety. But a couple that really stand out in my mind, just to share in brief, I would say, number one, and I see this all the time, I took a poll last week when I was presenting at an event. These were security practitioners, and every single hand in the room went up, which scared me. I said, who here in attendance uses free open Wi-Fi when they stay at a hotel such as this, and every single hand went up. That's one of the most common ways that hackers will exploit to get to your notebook, your mobile device, your smartphone to place malware. So if you associate to free open Wi-Fi within a hotel, within an event, and do not know if it's secure, and I can almost assure you it's probably not secure, you're risking getting compromised, and yet it happens every single day. You're much better off buying a 4G hotspot from one of the carriers and host your own Wi-Fi hotspot that you can connect all your mobile devices in, or use your mobile phone. That's going to be much more secure than a free open Wi-Fi hotspot. Use the data, spend the money. But I would not ever recommend using anything if it's free. If it's free, it's too good to be true, and you're probably setting yourself open to have your device compromised. Most people say, well, I have nothing that important on my device that could be compromised. Actually, we all do. It's not just our contacts, our emails, our texts. It's if we do banking over our phones, stock trades, 401k portfolio. They have access to everything through one device. If they get on your device and you bring your device to work, most likely you're associating your device to the access point at work, the wireless network there, which will allow them to now get onto your company's network. So you could see how they use something free and enticing to get on your device, plant malware, start the spy, and start to work laterally through your network or through your company's network, all through the innocence of something free. So that's probably one of my number one pieces of advice. Number two, passwords. It always goes back to that. Just about every major breach out there, if you dig in deep enough, at some point there was a password that was compromised. My suggestion, if you're not disciplined at writing down a long password, 15 plus characters, numbers, something very random, then use a passphrase where the start of each letter of the passphrase is the password. The key is make it really long. 15, 20 characters, very difficult to hack. 6 characters, 8 characters, even if it's random, is very easy to hack in a matter of minutes with some of the automated hacking tools that you can get nowadays on the dark web. So create a long password whenever you can. If you have Google Mail and Yahoo Mail and all these other mails that are free, realize you're trading security for convenience. So when that happens, use two-factor authentication, where it will be an additional layer, a passcode or something that you have to enter to actually access it. That will cut down your chances of being hacked dramatically. Huge concern that most people, again, they want the convenience of just logging on quickly. They're too lazy. Get a good anti-key logger, because key loggers are becoming one of the number one problems, especially in the world of cryptocurrency. People can easily steal your passkey. They can have access and steal your cryptocurrency, and it's not backed like traditional dollars in a bank. There's no FDIC insurance there. Once your currency is stolen, it's gone forever. There's no recourse. And many of these exchanges that hold cryptocurrency for individuals are getting robbed blind. Millions and millions of dollars have been taken. And it continues to happen because people are not thinking passwords. They're not thinking two-factor authentication. They're not using encryption. So there's a lot of steps that people need to take to keep their information secure. Another big step that I always emphasize every time I go into companies, the most obvious thing, yet the majority of people still don't do it or have it, is a really good paper shredder. Micro cross-cut destroys, obliterates the paper, so a single sheet of paper is more than 2,000 pieces of confetti. It's a few $100 investment. It's worth getting. You could destroy CDs with that. You could destroy physical credit cards with that. And, of course, documents that you want to shred that have any type of personal information, social security numbers, account numbers, banking information, you name it on there. Those kind of are a couple very basic tips at the higher level that I think are people need to, if the average person just did those four things, they would probably increase their chance of being safe on the internet and shopping and everything else, because they're thinking security and keeping their personal information safe. Makes a difference.
Well, I just want to ask one final question. I've written a lot about passwords and people, creating long and complex passwords, but they're hard to remember. When people write them down, they put on post-its. It's called post syndrome. What are your thoughts on using a password manager? I've written a lot about that. I think they're effective, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do a combination of both. I use a password manager myself. Dashlane is the particular one of choice. I've tried a couple different ones. They've got a nice, free, simple one you could start out with if you really like it. You could subscribe and get the updates and hold a lot more. They've got a good, secure password vault. They're the only company that I know that has not been compromised yet. So that being said, it's why I'm very hesitant to use all my passwords on a password manager, because just about every company under the sun has had a degree of compromise, because if you think about it, that's where hackers are targeting. If they can get in and compromise your master password, they've got the whole treasure trove for all 50 or 100 of your passwords to everything across the internet. So be careful. I personally prefer anything secure. Write it down, old school. I keep it in a black book, layers of security, in my safe, in my locked office, cameras, in a locked building with an alarm. So layers of security keep my passwords safe. They're a pain to maintain. I print them out on a Dymo label as I update them, so that way I can keep the history of everything and have literally a book that has hundreds of passwords in it that I am constantly managing. But since I've done that, I haven't been compromised with that. So it's finding that right balance for each person. If you have a couple passwords, it's pretty easy. When you get into a lot of them, it becomes a chore. If people are not disciplined, then I highly recommend using a password manager. It's going to improve your security 100-fold.
True. Well, Scott, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. And we hope to hear from you again here in the near future. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and encourage all your listeners to stay safe.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you.